Vai lá, Josimar, na grande área, grande lance, vai bater, atenção, cruzou, bateu, gol!
Velkommen til Gars og en litt spesiell episode av Josimar podcast. På grunn av koronaviruset har det vært litt vanskelig å samle en gjeng slik vi pleier å gjøre for å skravle om fotball. Men jeg har veldig lyst til å relansere et intervju jeg gjorde med Sandefjords trener Martí Cifuentes våren 2019. Det var et intervju jeg synes var utrolig interessant og forfriskende. Vi tilbake neste uke med en ordinær podcast. Ta vare, folkens, og vi høres neste uke. I dag har jeg med meg Sandefjord sin trener, Martí Cifuentes. Han 36 år og kommer fra Barcelona. Martí startet sin trenerkarriere allerede som 21-åring i yngres avdeling i den nærverdige klubben Sant Andreu i Barcelona. Ved siden av å være en prolisensiert trener har han studert ved Johan Cruyff Institutt med ukentlige samtaler med Cruyff. Han kom fra AIK sitt akademi til Sandefjord i juni 2018. Da hadde klubben 5 poeng og hadde i realiteten rykket ned. Men etter Martí tok styringen begynte de å ta imponerende antall med poeng. I denne podcasten diskuterer vi arven etter Cruyff, triangler og kunsten å spille seg ut bakfra. Martin. Welcome to the podcast.
Tusen takk.
How is Norway treating you?
Actually, fantastic. I can just say good things. It's a very nice experience.
And a cold one?
Sometimes it can be quite cold, but I'm getting used to. I was living 2 years before in Sweden, so I'm getting more used to Scandinavian weather. But it's quite good in Sandefjord, actually.
Yeah, you're very polite.
Thank you very much.
Regarding the weather.
You know, we have been out abroad for the last 3 months in pre-season, so we had different camps away. Yeah. So, yeah, we're not struggling that much then.
Do you prefer I call you Martin or Martí or...
I mean, I'm okay, but the what? Catalan pronunciation is Martí.
Martí?
Yeah, so I think you're doing quite well.
Then we go with Martí.
Yeah, thank you.
You came into Norwegian football last year in the almost middle of the season or a little bit later.
1st June, if I'm not wrong.
Yes. And from there, even though Sandefjord got relegated, it showed a huge improvement. Both in results and in terms of playing more entertaining football. What was your first kind of changes when you came into the dressing room and taking over the team?
Yeah, obviously it was not an easy situation because from the first time we were speaking with the board until I signed the contract and I arrived here. Few weeks, some weeks in between. So yeah, the results were getting worse and worse. And then when we arrived, I think that it was after 13 games, 14 games, 12, 13, and the team has only 5 points. So we knew that the situation was not easy. But you know, when you arrive in a new club, you have a lot of energy. I trust a lot the level of the players it was here, even if I know that it was so easy just to say that the squad was not good enough. I thought that it was potential in the group. So then the first thing for me is like mentally and emotionally, you need to let them know that you trust them, because that was my feeling. Otherwise, I didn't have the need to leave a great club in Sweden like is AIK and to come to a gamble. You know, in a with the bottom situation team. So the first of all, I think it was more a psychological approach, and then the second was the way we want to play, because that's the way I think that you can win games. So the approach was perhaps different than it was before. I would say that were the two main areas.
Because at least in Scandinavia, when you take over a bottom team, the first response is to close or improve the defensive, like putting 10 players in defense in a way. But you did it in a complete different way. It was more playing, playing with a more kind of risk, as we often say in Scandinavia. Do you think that was a gamble, or is it your, you are from Barcelona and Catalonia, of course, with a, I presume, a Barcelona DNA. So is it in a way the way you are brought up in a way in a football culture you are grown up to and what you believe in, or yeah?
Definitely, I think that all the coaches, at the end, we have our own philosophy, and this philosophy mostly is coming when you grow up from a kid to be a player. You have a lot of influence from many, many different ways. And on my case, I grown up when Johan Cruyff took FC Barcelona, the dream team period.
We're now talking early 90s.
Early 90s, that's it. So yeah. Ronald Koeman, Michael Laudrup, Risto Stoichkov, when FC Barcelona won the first Champions League title. So I was amazing, like shocked of the way Johan Cruyff wanted to play football. And I really get engaged on football because of that. So then as a player, I was just a decent player, never get the step to be a top player. But mostly I was a player that won the ball, that was technically more or less, let's say, decent. So the way I see football is this one. And for me, I can understand that obviously this background has a huge influence, but as well the way I understand football today is that you cannot try to disconnect or try to separate the defense with the offense. For me, football is all connected. So the way you will attack will affect the way you will defend. And actually, on my eyes, if you are really dominant, then you will defend less actions, and as high in the pitch you are, farther is the ball from our goal. So that's the way I feel more safe.
Yes,
and actually perhaps it's a bit more defensive minded than what many people could think, but I really want to be dominant, obviously, because then we can score goals, but as well especially because then the ball is quite far from my goal. So it's perhaps more defensive minded my approach than many people think.
It's like the Johan Cruyff quote: as long as we have the ball, the other team can't score.
Still, football is only played with one ball. So, meanwhile, this is happening. I'm sure that when you are in possession, and the other team cannot score.
If you ask many coaches, they will say that, well, I can't play like Barcelona, for example, because I don't have the players for it. What is your response to that claim?
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, not all the teams can play as FC Barcelona. Every team is different. Every player is different. But what is 100% true is that if you want to be dominant, you can build a team using some tools. You need to have some knowledge, obviously, about concepts. In my case, I took a lot of concepts from the positional game, that is a philosophy coming from Netherlands in 70s with Rinus Michels, but it's still working in many clubs. So actually Pep with Manchester City is working with the positional play. Barcelona, let's say that the last season is changing a little bit, but it's still the big influence in the academy, and the main philosophy is according to the positional game. So there are a lot of concepts involved. There are a lot of ways to try to be dominant, because you can be dominant on possession in many ways, but I think that it can be an excuse in many cases, like, no, but I don't have the players. Obviously every team has different players and each player has different skills, but I think that at the end one coach can implement a philosophy, even if we coaches we lack time. But if you have time enough, of course you can play in a way that you can be dominant.
When you talk about positional play, what kind of tools do you can you use? Is it more in a way creating triangles or overload certain areas and so on?
That's it. I mean, football at the end, it's on my eyes, time and space. Especially space, but as well you need to play on the right timing. So for me, it's not about running a lot. It's about running on the right time and to the right direction. Obviously, this can look a little bit like so easy to say, but I prefer any footballer in the world than not Usain Bolt.
Yes.
He's the fastest one, but or at least he was. Yeah. But he will not be on the right time, on the right space. And this is being the fastest one. For instance, I would say that I was enjoying a lot watching Iniesta. Still today, playing in Japan, he was far from being, from a physical point of view, a fast player. But in the pitch, he was the fastest one because he was always on the right time in the right space. So this is a little bit about the positional game, the positional philosophy of playing football, because it's about understanding that you need to fill some spaces that are key, but as well being there on the right timing to attract the opponent, for instance, from one side and then move to the other side to create gaps, to provoke gaps, to use the gaps. So it's about understanding of spaces and timing.
When we watch a team like that play that kind of football, we as spectators, we also say, oh, look at that player, he's so creative and so on. But my impression is watching some practices with Pep Guardiola, for example, it's very trained in a way. It's very German, in lack of a better word. Let me put an example. When Xavi, for example, have the ball and it goes out to the right wing, he comes up and get the ball back, and then he makes a cross to Iniesta, but behind the defense. It's something you see very regularly when they used to play in Barcelona. But I also see Pep also practiced a lot of those moves. So how much is creativity and how much of those moves are actually worked on in practice, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, because it's true that this philosophy, I would say, that encourage players to have a lot of creativity, but at the same time, it's so demanding on understanding those spaces and this timing. I would say that especially until the last third of the pitch, there are many rules that you need to follow if you want to play on that way. So for instance, we have, now I'm talking about Sandefjord, but are common principles in positional philosophy that you can apply and you can check in all the teams in the world that are playing on that way. For instance, on the build-up, and the first step of the possession, when you are low in your pitch, when you are facing the first line of pressure of the opponent, then there are some principles that you need to follow if you want to have a clean build-up. So that means that the pass breaking the lines, the pass that the next player will receive behind the first line of pressure should be good enough for then the team to travel together. So to step up together. But before of that, you need to move the ball fast. So for instance, in Sandefjord, we call that moment the ball tempo. The tempo of how the players are moving the ball side to side to find the gap to break the lines, which is actually another principle. So breaking line means that, for instance, each player needs to control mostly the ball with the farther leg, because that then you get more pace in the game. That means that when a player is alone, you need to mostly drive to attract one of the opponents and then deliver to the free man. But obviously, if you are not moving and doing that in a coordinated way, nothing of that concepts about breaking lines, about building up, gonna happen. So inside any big principle, let's say there are a lot of micro or individual concepts that you need to work a lot on. Easy like that. So that's why I totally understand your expression, and actually I like it, like this German approach, if you want, this way of training you need to get used to, and you need to know how to train on that way. And I'm completely agree that then in the last third is when we say to the, especially the most talented players, then chaos, then do whatever. Because in the last third is the moment that, okay, we already beat a lot of lines, and now it's the moment where the quality should show up, must show up. But to arrive to this last third, creating advantage, you need to do a lot of steps on the right way before. Because we don't want to put long balls. For instance, now we have Rufo, we have Tobias, talented players. If we just kick long balls for them, perhaps in a game they will have one, two situations where they can really show up in the way they really know. But if we want to give them advantage and take advantage of their qualities, we need to give them balls in those spaces where they can really show up in a good condition. So that's what we're trying to do.
What is the most common mistake a midfielder that isn't used to play that kind of football do in the build-up play, you think?
Well, depend a little bit about where. And I would say that it's different because I've been now coaching in Sweden, I've been in Netherlands, in UK, in Spain. So every country is a little bit different and every player is different. But I would say that it's a common mistake to understand this concept about driving to attract one opponent and then deliver. This is something that you need to understand when to play fast without attracting and when it's needed to drive a little bit to attract someone and find the Freeman. This is not easy, and it's not a concept that if you don't work on it when you're a kid, then it's not easy to take when you are 30 years old.
Is it like when a midfielder receives the ball, he tries to turn around by himself and then loses the ball? Is that a common mistake, you think?
That can be another one, obviously. I mean, sometimes you find players that they think that even playing at top level or first division level, they think that they can turn easily. So against good teams, this is really hard to manage. It's mostly about the body shape, and this is another individual concept that we talk a lot in our practices. The body shape is regarding where is the ball. You need to have a specific body shape. So then when you can control this ball, you take an advantage of the first touch. So then you don't need to turn. When the ball is coming, you're already turned with the right body shape.
Yes.
That's another common mistake, definitely.
Xavi has actually a fantastic YouTube video on how to turn.
Fantastic coach.
Yeah. But we have actually started in the wrong end. How did you start your coaching career in a way?
Yeah, it was a little bit coincidence, but it came before I thought and I expect, because I was still playing. I was 21 years old and I had on my mind, I love football, and I was 100% sure that I really want to be a coach when I finish my career. But I was 21, I was still playing, and the sports director of the third club historically in Catalonia, Centre d'Esports Sabadell. They play 15 seasons, 14 seasons actually, in first division. So it's quite a historic club in Spain. He called me and I thought, okay, perhaps I will sign with them. And then he told me, no, but Marti, I know you from, I had some references. I really think that you can be a good coach. So I have the under 19 team ready for you if you want to take it. And I was shocked because obviously I didn't expect that. I was still playing. But then I managed to keep playing football and start this coaching step. Actually, because, to be honest, because it was an under 19 team and because it was in a good club. Otherwise, I would say no. But it was a good challenge. And then from that, the week one, I realized that I really want to do that. So I start with 21. I was there for 5 seasons. It was amazing years. We promote, we won leagues. After 3 seasons, I was assistant coach in the first team with only 23 years old. So I was the youngest one in professional football in Spain. It was an amazing experience, actually. And then from that, everything came in a row.
You are still young, but
not that much anymore. But
yeah. but highly experienced in a way. Yeah,
I start quite young. That's the thing, and I know that head coach with only 36 years old, in some way, can be inexperienced in many situations. But that's true as well. That I always saw that experience is about the number of questions that you make yourself every day. Mm. And then you get the experience when you challenge yourself every day, when you experience a new situation. So then from that, I would say that in some way I have 15 years experience as a head coach. So it's not that bad.
And that's really good. But you also attended Johan Cruyff's, is it called Institute?
Yeah, in Barcelona, it's called Institute. In Netherlands, it's called University. So,
yes.
Yeah.
How was that?
Actually, a really good experience. At that time, when I was, when I ended my high school, I started to study as well a business degree and law degree. Mm-hmm. At some moment, I moved to Netherlands to study football, actually. I took a kind of year off. So, I used that time to go to some parts in the world and learn football. And I chose Netherlands because of my philosophy, obviously. But then after I moved to England, and then when I came back is when I decided to study this MBA, actually, in sport business.
Yes.
It was 1 year and Johan Cruyff was there very often. So it was an amazing experience because I really admire him. And not only as a player, not only as a coach, but as a person, as a human being. So it was really good as well professionally to understand how sports business and sports companies, football clubs works inside. Hmm. And yeah, to be a little bit more ready as a head coach.
Did you meet him several times?
Yeah, I had actually built a kind of relation, if you want. So yeah, I met him a lot of times, and from that I started to collaborate with Cruyff Foundation.
Yeah.
So actually it was a great experience.
Did he give you some giveaways of how being a coach?
You know, to be honest, every time I met him, I tried to speak with him as much as I could and ask him many questions. And I can just say that he was a genius. The kind of answers that you could get from him and the experience that he explained to me, it was something else. So definitely I was always trying to get...
Do you have a top one list of the most important thing he teached you?
Wow, you know, yeah, out of the philosophy, but I will say that the biggest thing that I learned listening to him is that I realized that I don't know nothing about football.
Yeah.
Because, many times, you know, I think that it's a process, perhaps as a coach, but when you start and you get your license, and I got my license, a UEFA Pro license, quite young, then you think that you know a lot about football. Mm. And then when you talk with these people that has been in the top, and how clear they see situations, how they can predict or anticipate what's going to happen in a game, or you realize that at the end you need a long way until you really know much more about football. So I would say that out of a lot of experiences or histories, I would say that I realized about that I didn't know that much about football.
It's like the philosopher Socrates. The only thing I know is that I don't know nothing.
100%.
But later on, you came to Sweden on AIK. Mm-hmm. How come that about?
Look, it was not an easy decision. It was in one way, but I was coaching in Segunda B, the third tie in Barcelona, mm-hmm. in Spain.
Mm. For which club?
I was in San Andreu, and then I moved to Hospitalet. So actually two historic clubs in Catalonia. It was not easy because I was the youngest coach at that time in the division.
Yes.
And it's professional football and the level is quite high. So it was a good experience for me, but at some moment after these two experiences ended in a, let's say, non-sports situations, so like business situation, change of board, and some things that at the end affect my projects and my career, I realized that I really want to take a challenge abroad. Mm. And then I received some options or some offers to go to China, to some, let's say, more exotic countries, but I really want something in Europe. And then through some people, it came that possibility to join OIKO. And then I thought it was a very good step because it is a big club in a European country, a country that I really respect in terms of football. And it was a good challenge for me. So, then I moved to Sweden and it was a great experience. Even if it was not as a head coach in the beginning, I could learn a lot from Rickard Norling. In the first team, and I was working actively with academy as well in training methodology and how to take some steps forward in terms of philosophy. So it was actually very fun period.
How do you think working in Scandinavia has improved you as a coach from an educational standpoint in a way?
Honestly, a lot. I mean, I am the one that I'm thinking that I can always learn and I can always improve. So obviously, if you ask me, I think, and I think that everybody probably will share that obviously top leagues are England, are Spain, are Italy, Bundesliga, but probably not Swedish or Norwegian leagues. But at the same time, there is a deep culture in Scandinavian football. Coming from many years playing football, coming from the English period, and now I'm talking especially about Sweden, but when Roy Hodgson and on 70s with Malmo, they had a huge influence before probably the German football had a stronger influence. So in some way I learned a lot of new things, new concepts, and at the end, especially professionally, you develop, definitely, because you... it's a new experience in a big club. It's a new experience with new concepts, football concepts that perhaps in other leagues are not that important. But at the end, you learn from everybody. So it was a good experience.
And then the rumor came and you came to Norway.
Actually, I was lucky because, OIKO is a big club. And then from that, many people...
I think it's one of Scandinavia's biggest clubs. At least top three, I think.
My experience it was that at least in Sweden, it's a top three club with probably Malmo and Göteborg in terms of history. Perhaps now Göteborg is stronger a little bit the last seasons, but definitely has the potential to be one of the top three always, OIKO in my eyes. But so you can imagine, it was a little bit exotic having like a Spanish coach in a club that historically has been like very Swedish approach, like fido fido tuo, hard pressing, long balls.
Yeah.
And then suddenly one guy coming with another philosophy, perhaps shows the change that the club is making in many areas. So from that, I had the possibility to speak with different people and clubs. But when Sandefjord came, I visited the facilities, I visited the city. We had long talks with the board, and actually I was very excited about the possibilities, the potential of the club. So that's what made me take the decision, even if perhaps before it were some other possibilities, and I'm sure that later it could be other possibilities. In some way, I thought that I felt that this was a good option.
When I did research on you, one thing several people told me was the way you try to build a club or in a unity inside the team. For example, before the games, you invite all the wives and all the children before the games and take the last pep talk together. I never heard of something like that before. Where do you have that from?
Perhaps it's, I don't know, you always try to think in the best for the team, and that's true that we are trying to do according to what some guys are telling to me, perhaps it's new for them, but you always try to do in the way you really feel that is
correct in a way. Yeah,
but not. I will not say correct because I will not be like this is better than anyone. It's just the way I feel it, and the way I feel it is the closest for me to try to win games and try to be successful. So I thought that on my eyes, one value that is extremely important is the team spirit, the commitment, the unity, if you want. So everybody in the club should feel proud when we're winning a game, because it's not only about the work that the coaches here, I have amazing coaches working with me, is not about the work that the guys and the players are doing in the pitch, that obviously is the most important, but as well because in the kitchen they are cooking for us every morning, and because the cleaning girl is helping us in her job. So I think that if everybody is doing on the right way, job.
So all of those people is in the wardrobe before the game?
No, they were actually not of them. In that case, it was this first league game that we invite all the wives and families because we thought it was a good moment to just say, look, we're going to start a new challenge, new season. We have a lot of expectations. So let's going to do that not only for the supporters, not only for us, but as well for our families. And it's a way to being stronger all together. But I think that at the end, what matters is that feeling that everybody should feel that is important, because it's how it is. Sometimes we think that it's all about the players, and obviously they are the main stars and we need to work for them. But at the same time, I think that it's very important that the conditions on the daily work, the kidman for me is so important as well. And yes, we take care for them. And actually we have a really good one, legend Laffer. So it's important that everybody feels part of it.
Yeah, we have to give a shout out to Laffer.
He already knows, so he's important.
When I heard that for the first time, I thought, well, his Catalan is from Barcelona.
It's a bit crazy.
And my Stone Club. I thought it was a connection there in a way. Are you a Barcelona fan or Espanyol fan?
No, yeah, actually, I'm more Barcelona fan. I'm not a hooligan. I'm not a supporter.
No.
But obviously, my family is Barcelona supporter. So in some way, I grown up being a FC Barcelona supporter. I would say that at some age, you start to look, I don't know if sadly or not, but you start to look at the games in a different way, like more like analyzing and professional way.
Yeah.
So
that's natural when you go into coaching in a way.
I think so. I think so. When I'm talking with many coaches, good friends, all of us, we feel the same, that in some way it's like a illness that you just can analyze the games, even if it's just, you know, a Sunday evening game, you're at home and in a day off, and then you cannot just stop like just enjoying the game. You start to analyze why this central back is doing this or why this team is doing that. So
you have two Catalan coaches in your coaching staff and some players, three or four?
Three Catalan guys and one from Andorra.
Yeah.
That is a small country very close to Catalonia. But
So it's not a huge debate about Espanyol against Barcelona in free time in a way.
Not so much. I mean, our goalkeeper coach Javi, he has been working 7 seasons in Espanyol.
Yes.
And he has been, from when he was a kid, he was a Espanyol supporter. So in a way, I would say that he's a real supporter. But Jordi González, the physical trainer and assistant coach, he's a FC Barcelona supporter. He was a former FC Barcelona futsal team player.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I think that Geir Ludwig soon, he will be fluent in Catalan. So, yeah, I think in a way, let's see. Perhaps he will bet in Espanyol or Barcelona, let's see.
Do you know the Norwegian expression tunnel?
Tunnel?
Yeah.
Nanmek? Tunnel?
When you play the ball
Sure.
Your assistant coach, what was his name again?
Jordi.
Jordi. How many tunnels has he done on Fevang?
Actually, to Gate, I don't say, no, not so much. I will say Gate is a difficult one to make an Admac, to be a tunnel.
Yeah.
He's a talented player. He still could play. But I know that Jordi loves to join the boxes and challenge the guys with his Admacs. But I know that he will receive soon some. So he need to take care.
In the end there, we have to go to the heart of... actually one question, why do people from or players and coaches from Barcelona hate the expression tiki-taka?
I mean, yeah, I know that it's not about hating, but perhaps we feel that doesn't reflect the aim of this positional way of playing.
Mm-hmm.
And because at the end tiki-taka, especially in Spain, perhaps had a not negative background, but in some way it was just like keep the ball with any other meaning than keeping the ball. And the way we understand football, at least the way I understand football, for me being in possession is just a tool, because what we want is to move the opponent, not have the ball.
Yes.
So then this tiki-taka is about, probably, I don't know how it is in Scandinavian countries, how do you think about this concept? But we feel it's a little bit like, yeah, doesn't reflect the reality of the positional way of playing.
Is that an underrated concept in a way, that you want to move the opposition and not the ball in a way?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think that many people think that it's just about keeping the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, all our exercise, mostly, the keeping the ball concept is not there, never. Mm. It's about moving the opponent, it's about switching from the strong side to the weak side, it's about breaking lines, but never about just keeping, because keeping without any more aim, sometimes it can be good just to, okay, breathe again after a long effort or big effort, but out of that, I don't see the meaning of just keeping the ball. So actually you want to have the ball to move the opponent and to be aggressive, to hurt the opponent and to create chances.
Regarding exercises, I believe Rondo is the heart of every Catalan football coach. But we have something called firkant in Norwegian. It's a square. When or pig in the middle,
okay.
It's more the English version of that. Can you explain what's the biggest difference between rondo doing a rondo correct and a pig in the middle?
As far as I know, and that's fun because this pig in the middle concept, I learned it when I was in UK.
Yeah,
I would say that for us, rondo is a tool to develop not only the passing skills, but the concepts in the game. So we don't see the rondo or whatever you call it, the box, as just as a having fun or warming up tool. It's more as a
serious business.
It is. Yes. It is actually. Yeah. So we are talking about the intensity. We are talking about the speed of the pass. We are talking about what we say before, the control with the farther leg. We are talking a lot about the body shape. If you are not in a good body shape in a rondo, you cannot survive.
Mm.
You will be always the one in the middle.
Yeah.
And obviously, inside a rondo, I will say that you can find almost everything in football, but the finishing part. Mm. So obviously you have not long runs, no? But if you are smart in a football pitch, without the need of, you know, attacking always 50 meters runs, you can travel together until you establish. So then I always say the forwards that are playing with us, instead of running 50 meters, if they run 15 meters on the right way,
mm-hmm.
10 meters on the right way, it's enough to have a goal chance. So I think it's better for almost every player.
How much time did you need to get the Sandefjord players to play the rondo correct?
I think that they understood quite fast what we were looking with this. I know that in many clubs it's quite usual that, I don't know, before starting the practice, the players just, you know, they take some balls and they start to play. this pick in the middle or whatever, or this kind of, but we let them understand from the first moment that, look, this is part of our training. This is our core and the training. So it's not obviously everything about rondos, but it's an important part. Every week we have many different kind of boxes or rondos. So let's say that the rondo is just a 5v2, 6v2, 7v3, like a square with some players in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is the positional game, where you are adding like a little bit more tactical tools. Like, for instance, perhaps there are lines, or for instance, a 4v4 plus 3 jokers. Mm-hmm. This is a positional game. The aim is the same than the rondo, but now you're adding a little more complexity. Mm. And then the last step, but this is a little bit advanced, is about what in Barcelona we call SSM. It's like situations that you build with the aim to recreate something, but it's about the understanding of time and space, the understanding of when a player should be full width, when a player should go in, to use the half spaces, for instance, so you can recreate a specific situation.
We are soon starting to getting to the end here.
Talk too much.
But we have some rapid questions in the end. And the first question is your favorite or biggest football experience?
On my own.
Oh, no, watching a team or... Yeah,
yeah, I would say that, yeah. It's hard to choose only one, but obviously when I was a kid, I usually went to Camp Nou to watch FC Barcelona games. I especially remember one where FC Barcelona playing Copa del Rey against Atletico Madrid were losing 4-0 after the halftime. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the game, Barcelona won 5-4. So it was a kind of good comeback. It shocked me. I was quite young. So, and then experiencing myself, I would say that,
That was when Bobby Robson was manager. Yeah,
actually, it was the first season after Johan Cruyff. Yeah. But it was a great moment with Ronaldo Nazario as the
real
striker.
The real Ronaldo.
Let's say that. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of good players. But yeah, and then as a coach, I had my own experience. So, but this one was special. I remember I was in Stamford Bridge when Iniesta scored the goal that at the end took the team to the final against, I will say it was the final against Manchester United, yeah, in the first season of Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as a head coach, I experienced some promotions, avoid relegation in the last game of the season. So it has been, yeah, some of good moments, obviously.
Your favorite football book?
Oof, that's a good one. You know, one of my favorite, I don't know, it's a hobby, but I love to buy and read football books. So in Barcelona and now here in Norway, I have a lot of football books. I try to read as much as I can. So every time I go to, I don't know, UK, I come back with 10 new books or wherever I go. But my favorite one, I would say when I was very young, I read one about one Argentinian head coach, Jorge Valdano, former national Argentina player. He won the World Cup in 86.
And he took also the sports director in Real Madrid.
Sports director. Yeah. And actually when he write this book, he was just taking the Real Madrid head coach position. So he won the league there in season 94-95. And yeah, it was a really good book that influenced me and in some way. Yeah, it was a good one.
The world's most underrated player.
Wow. This is a good one, actually. I would say only one. It's hard to pick. It's hard to pick. But there is one player that I really rate really, really high. Jorginho in Chelsea. I think he's, yeah, he's an amazing player. I wouldn't say underrated because, yeah, actually they spend quite a lot of money.
Right now he's very underrated.
Right now, yeah, I know.
Every Chelsea supporters want him out.
Absolutely, I know. But I think he's an amazing player. It's a hard one. It's a hard one. For instance, we were in Marbella last during the preseason, and we went to watch Sevilla. Mm. And Sevilla has an amazing player, Ever Banega.
Yeah.
He's not always performing at his top, but when he's on his top, he's a special, special player.
The most inspired coach?
Yeah, definitely right now I would say Pep, obviously. But in the long way, I would say that Johan Cruyff has been the foundation for many, many, many coaches.
In the end, if any other coaches want to read up on positional play, do you have some recommendation for some books or resources? Or
I think that nowadays it's quite easy to go and Google a little bit about it. So I think it's a lot of definitely information in internet. But the best experience I think that anyone interested in the positional game can have, I think that definitely is visiting Ajax,
yes,
in Netherlands, probably going to Manchester City right now, or to going to a Barcelona academy. Mm-hmm. Probably you can get a real feeling about what are the principles. There are many books. I should think about the name, the title of each book. But definitely there is a lot of information, I think, out there.
Then we go for Uncle Google.
Always Uncle Google.
Martin, it's been a pleasure, and thank you.
Sama, so much. Pleasure is mine.
And good luck with the rest of the season.
Tusen takk.
Yeah.
6 minutes noch. Bankdorfstadion in Bern. Schäfer nach innen geflankt. Kopfball abgewehrt aus dem Hintergrund. Müsste Rahn schießen. Rahn schießt. Verrückt, halten Sie mich für übergeschnappt. Ich glaube, auch Fußballer sollten ein Herz haben.
Takk for at du hørte på Josimars podcast. Du finner mer fotballstoff på nettsiden josimar.no.
Moderne medier.